Welcome to the 2020 CGA IGC podcast series, brought to you by the Education Committee. This season, we'll be hosting a virtual journal club. Each episode will highlight a recently published journal article that is important to the field of GI cancer genetics, and will feature an interview with one of the article's authors. Keep listening to find out more about this episode's host, guest, and featured article.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, we have Dr. Leah Biller. She's a medical oncologist at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, and we're going to be talking about a recent paper that she had published in Cancer Prevention Research in March of 2020, the title being A Multi-Institutional Cohort of Therapy-Associated Polyposis in Childhood and Young Adult Cancer Survivors. So, Leah, Dr. Biller, welcome to the podcast. So just to start off, my interest and probably the interest of those listening is what led to the whole concept of this article?
Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk about this. So the concept of therapy-associated polyposis, or TAP, really is one of those things that arose from clinic and trying to understand what was being seen in a subset of our patients who had a history of childhood or young adulthood cancer presenting with unexplained polyposis. And by unexplained, I mean without an identified genetic cause. We know that childhood and young adult cancer survivors are at increased risk for many secondary effects from their treatment, including colorectal cancers. And the Children's Oncology Group long-term follow-up guidelines, because of this, recommend earlier an increased colon cancer screening for patients who've had a history of radiation treatment for a childhood cancer. We also know from work from the Dutch that Hodgkin survivors may have a high prevalence of advanced adenomas. But polyposis, or 10 or more polyps in general, has been less understood until 2014, when Dr. Matt Yergelin, who's the senior author of this paper and the current president of CGA, first reported on therapy-associated polyposis with five patients who had colorectal polyps, as well as other clinical findings like desmoid tumors and papillary thyroid cancers that were seen at the Dana-Farber, given a concern for hereditary polyposis syndrome. All of the five patients had had APC and MUT-YH testing that didn't identify any pathogenic alterations. And so at that point, he and other authors hypothesized that this polyposis was acquired rather than hereditary, and that's where the concept of therapy-associated polyposis was sort of born.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, really just carving out a whole new niche. What, were the major goals when you went to go put this project together and the findings of this article?
So our main goal was really to describe therapy-associated polyposis using a larger cohort. In addition to that five-patient series, there were a few other small case series of up to three patients or so, and one of which was presented at a prior CGA meeting. In this study, however, we looked at 34 patients that came from eight different institutions, all of whom had a prior history of a childhood or young adulthood cancer and developed polyposis about two decades or so after their cancer treatment. And by polyposis, we really define this as a cumulative lifetime of over 10 polyps. Two-thirds of our 34 patients had 20 or more polyps, and a third actually had 50 or more polyps, with patients having, most of them, more than one histologic type, so adenomas, that's ulcerated, all in the same patient.
That's a lot of polyps, 50, without having an underlying genetic etiology.
Exactly. And interestingly, we also found that 75% almost had clinical features of hereditary polyposis syndromes that we know of. So, for example, patients may have met criteria for attenuated FAP or the WHO criteria for serrated polyposis syndrome, and some met criteria for both. We also saw patients with non-colorectal clinical characteristics like desmoid tumors, papillary thyroid cancer, and gastric and duodenal polyps that were also somewhat unexpected. And importantly, this occurred in survivors who had received radiation as well as those who did not receive any radiation and just got chemotherapy. Why this is important? So first, if the polyposis in TAP is secondary to an acquired process in the setting of their prior treatment, we suspect the risk for family members to develop polyposis or be at increased risk for cancer would likely be much lower. There may also be implications for polyp management and whether surgery is needed for patients with TAP. While we can't directly address screening recommendations just based on this study, we did feel that it would be, reasonable to think about screening some of these patients earlier, even if they haven't had radiation exposure. And similarly, since a third of patients had upper GI polyps, it wouldn't be unreasonable to think about getting at least a baseline EGD, although again, our study did not address optimal screening for these patients. But I think what we do really want to emphasize is that without understanding that TAP even exists, we suspect it's likely underrecognized by a lot of providers. Mm-hmm. And these patients may present to GI clinics or high-risk clinics with polyposis with features that mimic other hereditary cancer syndromes. And our goal here was truly to raise awareness in the community so it's on the differential when we're seeing these childhood and young adulthood patients.
Yeah, this is great. I mean, from someone that's looked into this themselves in the past, there's not a lot of literature on this topic. So it's great to get it out there. How did you identify the cases at all these different sites?
So we defined TAP as polyposis, like I said before, a lifetime cumulative incidence of 10 or more GI polyps of any type in childhood or young adulthood cancer survivors who'd had prior chemotherapy and or radiation that didn't have a genetic predisposition. The patients were identified, importantly, not in any systematic fashion. We really just reached out to other high-risk genetics groups, as you can see from the author list, many of whom are also CGA members. And I had the opportunity to present on our initial cohort at the CGA annual meeting in 2018, which also led to discussions and meeting with others who had TAP patients to contribute.
That's great. I mean, that's how to get it done. when you went to go put the data together, did you run into any challenges?
Yes, we certainly did, predominantly from limitations in what data we were able to collect. Since many of the patients were diagnosed with their childhood cancer 20, 30 years ago, we didn't have clear records all the time. Most of the notes were handwritten, so just collecting the data was challenging. Things like pathology reports were often limited just based on the time from when they were performed. So we had some limitations in what data we could collect, as well as, one area we were very interested in was why patients underwent their first colonoscopy, meaning was it because of symptoms or due to just routine screening based on the Children's Oncology Group guidelines. So we didn't really have reliable indications for colonoscopy, which would have been very interesting.
This is a great addition to the literature. I mean, what are you now getting into these days? Are you going to keep perpetuating this research and concept?
Well, we're hoping to kind of expand on the understanding of TAP in a couple different ways. The first is sort of epidemiologically trying to get a sense of the prevalence by being more systematic, working with survivorship registries to hopefully try to understand truly how common this is, and then ideally find out who might be at risk and so we can tailor screening appropriately. From a translational front, we're also interested in trying to understand the biologic underpinnings for why this polyposis is developing. Because patients had multiple polyp types, which are classically understood to occur via different molecular pathways, it would seem something different is happening here in these patients. And so there would be implications if we could understand what the drivers were and how they relate to prior treatment for childhood and young adulthood cancers.
Well, thank you for telling us all about this interesting research. So if people haven't looked at it, please definitely look through cancer prevention research from 2020 and look up the article by Dr. Biller on therapy-associated polyposis. And I'm Dr. Thomas Slavin, and thank you. And I really appreciate having Dr. Biller on the podcast. And thanks to her and all the co-authors for putting this amazing research together and really, getting it out there that this is a real condition that we need to keep on our radar.